Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today is the last day of April 2014, and you're tuning to another episode of The Bright Side with Technisha. I just want to say to everyone out there, just be careful because we know we have bad weather at the moment. Currently, they're reporting about a school outage in Clayton County. So just try to be careful. Take caution if you're out there in the weather. Make sure you go get your kids quickly from school. So there's just a few little things that I wanted to say. But today, we're going to discuss about midlife crisis and how to get your mojo back. For many, midlife is a time of great questioning. It is a time when many seek their purpose and look for a more esoteric existence, searching for their spirituality, their soul, and more meaning to their life. It is also a time when many feel trapped within the confines of responsibilities, family, and fears. How can we overcome these obstacles and emerge as our true self? What is the midlife crisis? And here to explain it all is Frankie Boccaccio, and she has a great book out, Midlife Mojo, How to Get Through the Midlife Crisis and Emerge as Your True Self. So good afternoon, Frankie. I'm glad we're on the show today with you.
I'm glad to be here too, Technisha. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's great, really. I'm glad that you were able to warn people about the storms in your area and to look after their children. It's important to keep them in mind. Absolutely.
It is the little things that we don't think about because two people died in Alabama, so we just have to take cautions. And they also said, you know, they was giving out tornado watch yesterday. And if you don't have a basement, try to get to a secure interior part of your house. Most people were joking yesterday on my job. I'm gonna get my purse and all that. So, you know, when you're going through that type of situation, you don't know what you're gonna be able to grab. I know one thing. I'm gonna grab my children and make sure we head
That's
to the basement.
Right. Hopefully, that's right. Hopefully. You know, I lived through a tornado. I went to high school in Louisville, Kentucky, when I was younger, and in the 70s, it was my first tornado, and I watched the tornado come to the house, and my mom screaming, get downstairs, and it was, you know, we didn't have them where I lived before, and I watched it, and then we ran down to the basement, and our house was untouched, but it's amazing how it, you know, the house next to me lost its whole roof, and around me, and 200-year-old trees in this beautiful park that's in Louisville, just down. They were down. Like, these are trees you couldn't even put your arms around, like, gone. And I went out and I took photographs of, you know, cars wrapped around trees and all sorts of devastation. And it's just fascinating and horrible at the same time, but, you know, what a tornado can do. When you live in a place where you have tornadoes, you certainly want to be very careful because they're nothing to fool around with, that's for sure. Like, the power is incredible.
It's not, and they're showing footage of this happening right now in Pensacola, Florida. So I'll just keep people updated on what's going on throughout the show. But let's get started with Frankie because we all have this midlife. And Frankie, does this pertain to man too? Because
absolutely. Yes, it's both sexes. We both have it. We have it at different times and in a different way. It manifests,
yeah.
but both sexes definitely go through it. What I like to say is that the midlife crisis is actually a metamorphosis. It's a metamorphosis that transforms and transitions us from what I call our socialized self to our true self and really the person that we came here to be. So our socialized self is that self that our parents first started with. You know, you have to be a good boy, be a good girl, and then you go to school, and school tells you how to sit and don't move, and now you can move, and all of those things. And then society gives you their rules of how you should be and act and who you should be. But, you know, we're all molded by our environment, and so many times the person that we were really meant to be and that creative person, let's say, that's been tampered down by parents, grandparents, whoever was doing the raising of us, schools, to you know, fit into that mold or idea that they had for us. So oftentimes we start to feel stuck in midlife, and it's like, wait, I don't feel like this is who I'm supposed to be. And we feel that that countdown starting, you know, we're not going to be here too much longer. We got to get this job done. And that looking back, that hindsight that says, wow, you know what, I probably could have done a whole lot more. I wish I had done something different. And so we try to find that person that we feel inside we are, maybe haven't even met them yet, but acknowledge that there's something missing. Does that make sense?
It does. It almost make you think about close to menopause a little. But
yeah, it is. It is. It's exactly, you know, what women get that feeling in menopause. And sometimes, like I would say that the midlife crisis can happen anywhere. A lot of times women in their 30s, there's a phenomenon in their 30s where they feel, a lot of times they'll leave a marriage in their 30s, mid-30s, just feel this desire to break out and be themselves, you know, not have anybody tell them what to do. And that might have stemmed from going from mommy's house to the marriage and never having anything in between. Not as common today as before, but there is a phenomenon. It has a name. I cannot remember the name right now, but I've seen it happen time and time again. The men, most people are, you know, familiar with going out, getting the motorcycle, the Ferrari, like a bull in a china shop, getting the 20-year-old something girlfriend, leaving the 30-year-old, you know, the 30-year marriage. That's a lot of times how it will manifest. And really what that is it's chaos. And the chaos is the catalyst for the metamorphosis, because, you know, change happens best in chaos. When everything is fine or when people don't need to change, they don't. They don't leave the comfort zone for anything. Just like, you know, they don't want anything changed in their life. They're happy with, maybe not happy, but it's too much effort, you know, to go and make this change. And so nature does it for them. And so chaos happens and we start to find ourselves changing because we have to.
Okay. Now, with this midlife crisis, it's kind of sort of different between men, like you said. It seems like men always seem to want to prove a point or something, because it's hard for men to even cope with things just to hear breast cancer, midlife crisis. And to me, women, we often get validity through relationships, and I think that's true even if we had a lifelong career. So in midlife, we're likely to evaluate our performance as a wife, mother, or even both.
We have a lot of roles, women, but we also talk to other women. Like we're fortunate that we converse and we have a lexicon and a language that allows us to really let people know how we're feeling. You know, we've got a lot of words around, you know, our feelings that men don't have the opportunity necessarily to use. And so this, you know, this crisis, though, this time of midlife change, in some ways it happens in a vacuum, because when we go through our first change in adolescence, we do that in school with our peers. But there's such a widespread years, you know, it could be years. You could be in your 40s or you could be in your 60s going through this midlife crisis. You go through it by yourself pretty much, you know. So it's kind of a lonely thing. But women, you know, we still have each other. We'll talk to other women. We're open about, you know, what's going on in our feelings, where men are a lot more closed about it. And so they manifest in a different way, for sure.
Now, Frankie, what do you mean by mojo? I like that.
Yeah. Mojo is actually an African word from the Congo, and it means life force or vitality. So it's really, you know, getting your life force and vitality back. There's a lot of people in their 40s, 50s, you know, who feel tired, who feel dragged down by life. You know, they're working a couple of jobs, they got their kids, they got to run them here, run them there, and they don't really think about themselves and their life force or their energy or their bright light, you know, in this world, who they're supposed to be, is kind of dimmed. And so it's like getting back that spark, that feeling like I can do anything. I really want to do something. I want to be, like you said, you know, the beginning when we first started talking about, you want to change the world. You want to be, you know, light up this world and make people feel good and yes, you know, have an impact. That's your life force. That's your life force talking. And that's, you know, people, too many people live in fear. It's probably the biggest thing that you know, as a coach, people will come to me, not even recognizing that it is fear, but it is fear, you know, speaking why they don't do things. You know, why they don't make changes in their life and, you know, why women don't leave marriages or bad relationships is fear. You know, when you know it's the best thing for you, you know. But they stay. They stay because change is hard, and they stay because they're afraid.
And that's true. And that's why a lot of people stay on the same job. For instance, at mine, we have people that have been there for 25 years. You're too afraid to actually move on. And, you know, you start getting older, people don't want to hire you as much. So that's why a lot of people, they don't want that change. Women out there don't want, like you said, don't want to move from bad relationships to another. You're too afraid. If I leave him, I won't be taken care of. So I'm going to stay in this abusive relationship. I'm just going to keep getting beat up. I'm too afraid to actually go on and get my own job, let them know that I can be independent myself. So, and it's sad that you have, it's sad that you feel that you don't have a choice in the matter.
But we always have a choice, don't we? We have the choice to leave and to make changes and to not be afraid. The Chinese have a wonderful, they've got two characters for the word change. One is danger and the other is opportunity. And that's what most people feel. You know, they feel the danger of leaving their comfort zone, and yet that's where opportunity lives. So if you, you know, put one foot out, you're one foot into your opportunity. And so if you leave a bad relationship, you know, you're one step away from having something wonderful about to happen to you or the potential for something wonderful to happen to you. But it's not going to happen when you're in a bad relationship. You know, that white knight is not going to come for you because your energy level, your energy or your vibration is not at where they are. You have to raise yourself up to get to the next one. You have to. You have to leave. You have to change. And that's really what my book is about. It's a prescription for change, whether it's midlife, whether you're 18 or 75. It's a prescription for change. How do I change my life? And, you know, I talk about how to get rid of negative, you know, self-doubt and how to overcome obstacles and things like that. And ask yourself questions. You know, the first job of a good life coach or a good business coach is to ask questions. And so I ask people to question themselves. You know, if everything was even, you know, if you had enough money to look after yourself, would you stay in that relationship? Would you still have the friends that you have? You know, would you have the same job? Would you live in the same neighborhood? Would you move away? So these are just questions that people should be asking themselves from time to time. And if you're not authentic about it, then, you know, you're probably not happy. People
don't
make do.
Yeah.
You know, people just make do. And that's not living. And that's not taking advantage of the, you know, 80-some-odd years, hopefully, that we have on this planet to experience what's here. It's an amazing world, an amazing life. So really, to live it small and in fear and in your tiny little space, it doesn't do you justice.
It doesn't. And I agree with you all the way, Frankie. You got to step out. Your life, to me, you got to stretch those limits a little, and not only will your life become more exciting, but you'll build that confidence and you'll improve your luck. And some things, and you don't always know what to expect. Only God knows what's going to happen next. But you just can't live in that fear and that comfort zone, even if you don't know what's going to happen next. It's probably been a while for most people out there who are living in that comfort zone, but don't miss out. Don't miss the mixture of the anticipation and anxiety that makes your heart feel good. Turn your stomach up.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta have that feeling, enjoyment. Life is too short, and I'm going to spend it to
life is too short.
And I love what my coworker said. If I leave any cash behind when I leave this world, I did something wrong. That's why you have life insurance policies. Go out, enjoy yourself. No point of building up all that money, and you don't do nothing with it. I'm too afraid
to spend it.
Because I was like that too, Frankie. Too afraid to spend it. I got to pay these bills. But who wants? Now, yes, I'm not going to spend all my money up because I do have to sustain myself and have a roof over my head. But I don't want to live on the fear of if I don't have enough money, I can't go nowhere. That is so boring. It's boring.
It is boring. I mean, you can't bankrupt yourself. That, we're not saying go and do that. But what we're saying is that you're here to experience life. And if you live with that mentality that there's not enough, well, then there never will be enough. Like, I've been accused. I've been accused from time to time of spending money a little freely. But, you see, I don't worry about it because I know that it's going to come back to me somewhere, somehow. I don't worry about it. It will come. I'll find it. It'll find me. And it always does. Things always work out. You know how people say, we want to make sure that we have enough money to have our kids? There's never enough money to have kids. There'll never be enough money. Like, how could you? But you have them, and you get by. Somehow, it all works out, right?
And you and I were both surprised with
twins. We both had twins. You know, you're not expecting to have to pay for double of everything.
Right? No. No, I wasn't.
You know? But somehow, we made do, and we made out, and they survived, and they're, growing and grown up. Mine are grown up, yours are growing, and they're okay.
They are, and it will never stop. I will always have to put in money for both of them. It's not one, and two is like four, so no, it doesn't stop. And you, like you said, I agree with that statement. You will never have enough. There's not enough, unless you're a billionaire, then that's a little different. But other than that, have to stop worrying so much. And that was my main problem, worrying. Oh, I don't have this. I'm not going to be able to go anywhere. I don't want to live like that. I promise myself every summer, even if I have to just save up money and just keep saving so I get to that destination, that's fine. But that is exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to go different places. I want to explore. I don't want to be in the house all the time anymore. I'm rebelling.
There you go. Be a rebel. Be a rebel for yourself, and be your best. Be your own advocate for yourself. You know, the beliefs that we have. I don't know. You probably talked about it many times on your show about beliefs, but these beliefs that we have, they our conscious mind, and our subconscious mind is a funny thing. And our subconscious mind carries our beliefs, and it carries, how we feel about things. And those have been input. Like, they've been input to us by our parents, by educators, by different people that we've met in our life. They've told us things about ourselves, like, you're no good, you're sloppy, you're dumb, you're stupid, or you're, whatever it is. Those beliefs sit in our subconscious, and we believe it. And the subconscious does not have any morality. It doesn't know the difference between right and wrong, and it doesn't know if it's good or bad. It just knows what is. It's like a computer. You put the data in, and there it stays until you take it out. And in our conscious mind, it's going, but I don't want to believe that. That's not, I've told people that's not who I am. But you see, if things are showing up in your life that you don't want, look at your belief system, because for sure it's in your subconscious. Now, how do we get rid of those terrible beliefs? The first thing we do is we ask ourselves, do I really believe that? Where did that belief come from? And oftentimes you'll hear a voice in your head, and it won't, how people talk with an intonation. You'll recognize that voice. It could be your mom's or your dad's or an aunt's or grandparents or teachers, whoever's it is. But you'll recognize that speech pattern and how they say that word about you. And so that's the first step to understanding what you believe. So there's a lot of people who go, oh, I hate those rich people, or do you really hate rich people? Or, if you got money, would you hate yourself?
No, I would.
Well, a lot of times it'll be like a family, your family didn't, somebody in your family, all those rich bastards or whatever, right? It was just data entry. You haven't, but nobody ever takes the time to ask themselves, is that what I really believe? I know my family believes that, but do I? Is that how I really feel? And it's like being afraid of spiders. You know, maybe you grew up, everybody was afraid of spiders, but when you actually look at one, you go, you know what, I'm not really afraid of that. Why did I go all those years afraid of them? So the first step is really hearing it and understanding and asking yourself, is it mine? Does it belong to me? Because if it doesn't, let it go.
Okay. That makes sense. And you don't claim.
And that's how you get rid of that negative self-doubt. You know, you challenge it. And then you dismiss it, and you change your idea about how you feel about something.
And don't claim it. I mean, that's the main thing we do.
Yeah,
we claim
it.
We claim the depression.
Yeah.
You claim, oh, I have dyslexia. We got to stop claiming this stuff. It's only a part of you through your subconscious part of the mind. But, Frankie, this is what I want to know, because I know everyone can and will sooner or later in their life will have a midlife crisis. But how can one know if they are having one, and what are some of the signs?
Oh, that's a good one. Well, one thing is you start to wonder about life. You know, you start to wonder about your life, and you ask yourself, you know, what is my purpose? And you have this feeling like you're supposed to be doing something, but you don't know what it is. I don't know if you've ever felt that way, but it's really this overwhelming feeling of something's supposed to happen. I think I'm supposed to. It's almost like you forgot something, you know? It's almost like I'm forgetting something, but it really is about wanting to change. There's also a feeling that you want to help people. You want to help people in the world. And you feel like your job and your life is very ho-hum. You know, you're not interested anymore. It feels like depression sometimes. These are starting to be signs. You know, you start desiring a change. Oh, my God, I just can't stand it in here. I've got to get out. It's almost like you feel like you're in jail with your life. These are kind of starting signs that this crisis is about to happen. You're starting to make choices that you don't normally make, or look for things that you know. Some people go, well, that's not her, that's not him, they're not like that, and yet, you know, there's a part of you that's trying to crawl out and going, yes I am. Well, I am right now. I might not be later, but you know, that's that crisis trying to happen. And so you can, it's almost like there, you know, this egg, you're in this eggshell and somebody's hitting it from the inside and the outside trying to break free. That's kind of what it feels like, I think, for some people. And these are some of the signs, you know, but I find that most people, many people want to make changes. They want to help change the world. They start to have, go from a me to a more global sense of love.
Okay, yeah.
And desire. And,
Now, how might our beliefs be holding us back? Because I know you mentioned about beliefs earlier, too.
Yeah. So I started to talk to you about the voices that go on in your head. And so it's very important that we start to recognize the voices that we hear. And one of the exercises that I use in the book is to close your eyes and pretend that you've gone to the refrigerator and you took out some milk and, oops, you spilt it all over the floor. What was the first thought that came to your mind before you filtered it? What was the first, you know, thought? And oftentimes that first thought will be, you're so stupid, what an idiot, you know, derogatory words. And so that's the belief that we have about ourselves, is that we're stupid or we're clumsy or we're this or we're that. And so oftentimes listen for those words that you call yourself. Like, there's not a bully out there that will hurt you more than you'll hurt yourself. Guaranteed. We beat ourselves up so badly. And so that's a belief that we have about ourselves. And so, you know, we got to challenge that and stop doing that. And one of the exercises is to take, you know, those rubber bands or one of those rubber bracelets that people wear. And every time you catch yourself with a negative thought about yourself, you snap it. And probably day one, you'll be snapping 50 times. it's amazing how many negative thoughts we have about ourselves. So you start to snap, and then you rephrase that. You reframe that thought. So if that was I'm an idiot, you're going to reframe it to I'm amazing, I'm wonderful. You know, accidents happen, so what? You know, this kind of thing. And so as long as you do that reframe and hold it for, you know, about 17 seconds and think about it. And if you can't think of anything nice to say about yourself, just come up with one happy memory about yourself and keep that one in your back pocket. So when you do need time to reframe and think about yourself in a better light, you're able to do that. I think that, you know, how people see our self-esteem is, you know, our overall opinion of ourselves. And it involves judging our self-worth. And yes, many people have very low self-worth. You know, oftentimes we take that as a reflection from what other people say to us. But as I said before about those beliefs, you know, we need to challenge if there are beliefs, and we need to decide, is that how I want to be known? Is that who I want to be? And if it's not, then we change that. We change it, consciously change it. And what can happen in the subconscious is as we start to use a new pathway, neural pathway in our brain, and that's that I'm making a new path by changing my thought, if you can constantly begin to make that new thought, that will become the go-to pathway. So we'll leave that negative pathway behind, that negative belief, and we'll move to that positive belief about ourselves as long as we start switching our thinking.
And sometimes it's not easy for most people either, Frankie, because there is so much a part of them and all of us probably, and because it feels so risky to question any characteristic, that helps us feel safe. So it's not it's not always easy to just let go of the negative or the limited beliefs that really actually hold us back, like you were discussing.
It's not. And so one of the things that you can do is to model good behavior. So if there's somebody that you like or even a character on TV, it really doesn't matter. If you start to model them, pretend that you're them. Pretend you're a character. Pretend that you're a person who thinks a different way. Sometimes it's easier to do that and take on a character role. And how would that person act? How would that person act, that person who is positive and feels confident and amazing about themselves? You know, how would they walk? What would they dress like? How would they talk out in the world? And put on a role for, you know, a little while. And you know what? Faking it really does make it. It really does. And so sometimes we, you know, the little me can't do it. And so we take on this acting role and we can. We can expand, you know, and become whoever it is that we want to be. The past is not your potential. I said in my book, you know, the past is not your potential. Potential has no bounds. So choose to break free from your self-imposed limits. Like, that's all, what it's all about. We put limits on ourselves, and we go, that's all I can be. Not true. Not true at all. And, you know, I wrote about, you know, how Shakespeare said, you know, all the world is a stage. Well, I challenge you to question yourself, did I get the right role? Did they give me the role that, you know, I wanted, the starring role? And if they didn't, you know, change it. Nobody is stopping you but yourself. Guaranteed.
That's right. We sabotage ourselves all the time.
All the time. All the time. And it really, you know, people think it's really difficult, but to answer that in a question, how do I change my life? Change your thinking. That's all it is. It's a change of a thought. Do you want to live in default, like your computer comes? And then you put in all those great programs and it's amazing? Or do you want to be amazing? Like, you know, input some new programs in yourself. Invest in yourself. You know, meet new people, different people. You know, start using your God-given talents, whatever they may be. You might be an artist, you might be a singer, you might be a wonderful volunteer, who knows. But use them. And you will become a different person just by experiencing life in a different way.
Why?
Midlife,
you know,
isn't the end of life. It's not. It's kind of the beginning of the next 30 years. You really, you know, potentially have an additional 30 years to live forward. That's a lot of life. That's a lot of years. And if you do it right and you do it healthy, you can have an amazing time.
Well, before
you know, do you go to the store and buy vanilla all the time, or do you want to try different flavors?
Right. Well, I just wanted to piggyback off what you were saying, Frankie, before we even head to commercial break. And that is, like you were saying, the key is to change our thought process and thereby your belief about a particular situation. And you, when you open your mind to the new possibilities for your situation, what seems like a bad circumstance, it can instantly transform into endless opportunity. And sometimes you just have to keep track of all your new beliefs. And I also had did a little research, too. You know, they would say associating pain and pleasure. That's another effective way to change a limited belief is to get your brain to associate master pain to the old belief.
Yes. Yes. And you know what? When you look back in the future, it is painful. It was painful to hold
okay.
that belief in so many ways, wasn't it? Commercial?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And that makes sense. Because what you had to overcome was a painful situation. Yeah, now I do understand that. Now I'm just explaining it now. Yeah, all of us went through that painful
mm-hmm.
moment. When you look forward, you laugh about it. You just sit back
mm-hmm.
and you just laugh.
Absolutely, for sure.
But my audience, we're going to end up taking a quick commercial break, and we're going to be back with Frankie Picasso on talking about midlife mojo, getting the spirit back into your life and feeling young again, having that fulfillment in your life. So we'll be back after this.
There's only one station that will keep you happy, Blog Talk Radio. We're taking more of your calls at 347-426-3751. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this commercial break.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. And at the end of the day, the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. So United Way is asking you to make a pledge. Tutor a child who needs help. Mentor a kid who needs someone on their side. Volunteer to read to children. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Be a reader. Tutor or mentor. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge now at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
All right, before we left off, Frankie and I was talking about ways to eliminate the negativity out of your mind. And she has a great book out, Midlife Mojo, How to Get Through the Midlife Crisis and Emerge as Your True Self. And that's what we're talking about, and this is even for you guys. We know that you're afraid a lot of times to give out your sensitive side, but sometimes you go through things and you don't recognize it when you feel restless. One minute you're happy. Now you're down, your spirit just feel like it's lost. That is the midlife crisis that you're going through, and we all go through it, and I think it's not at a certain age, right, Frankie? This can happen
no.
at any age.
Any age. You know, men also go through, they go through andropause. We won't go through menopause, but men go through andropause, and their hormones take a big dip, too.
Okay.
And so, you know, they're not feeling as macho maybe or as, you know, energetic. You know, physiologically, they're tired. They don't have that spark either. And so it really is about, you know, staying healthy and making, you know, conscious changes and talking. Like what happens with the guys when they take off with these younger women
mm-hmm.
is, you know, they think, oh, this vitality, there's youth in front of me and I feel so young, you know. And then they realize a little while down the road that they have nothing in common with these women. And they start to look backward and go, gee, you know, my wife wasn't so bad. Because you have a history. You know, you can talk about the same TV shows and life experiences and where were you when Kennedy died and things like that this younger generation has no experience with. And isn't that what makes a great relationship is you know, the ability to have kinship and a friendship that's based on experience. So, you know, they run away for a little while, but then they start to come back and go, yeah, what was I thinking? But it was really just this chaotic behavior allowing them to leave a situation that they didn't want to be in anymore.
Wow.
If that
so
makes
this
sense.
Is, so, Frankie, this is really a characterization by a loss of testosterone for men, just like it is for women where we lose our hormones.
Right.
But, oh, wow.
And all of that can be, you know, helped, and it's a blood test away, really, right? And you can go to your doctor and find out if your thyroid's down or your testosterone is down or you know, you don't need Viagra. You just need, you know, it's hormones. and you know, take a peek. Maybe it's even how you're eating. You know, there's foods that affect us, and with all the genetically modified foods that we're eating, of course they're, you know, it's becoming very difficult to not be affected by it. You know, we look at young girls with breasts at 8 years old now from the hormones in the food. So, of course, the boys are going to be affected by it too.
Wow, and that's amazing. I know it sounds scary for you guys. But this is something that you have to think about. You go through the same issues that we go through. I mean, if you look at it, woman, that's where it actually, woman is the same as saying man. It's just with the W-O, we all have the same specific medical condition out here.
Absolutely.
I'm so glad to have you on the show, Frankie, because men don't think of this.
Thank you.
That's my breast count. Like, they don't think about menopause.
Andropause. And they can look that up. They can look up andropause and see what that, you know, what if they recognize any of the symptoms of it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So, Frankie, in your line of work, what are three main fears people you work with that you see hold them back from being happy or changing their life, and why? I know that we said fear, but what is really stopping them inside?
Yeah. That's a great question, and thanks for asking it. You might be surprised by one of these. The three main fears are change, which we all know, but fear of success and fear of failure. And you might say, well, why would somebody be afraid of success? Well, they're afraid because, not even consciously, but the fear of success is leaving people behind as you advance forward. You may end up leaving friends behind. And they may be, you know, jealous of your fortune to move forward. And so people around you will change, and your relationships will change. And life as you know it may not stay the same. People might not like you anymore. They may not ask you, you know, to be around them anymore. And on the other hand, they might ask you to do more. And so if you kind of, in your head, believe in that belief about yourself that you're maybe a one-hit wonder, you might be worried that, oh my gosh, I did it once, but I don't know if I can repeat myself. I don't know if I can do that again. So there's that fear of success of moving forward because people might ask too much of you. And you know, you may not be happy with the outcomes, or they may not be happy with the outcomes. So that's one fear that's kind of interesting. Fear of failure, of course, it's taking another blow to our self-esteem. We worry about that. We fear that we disappoint people who count on us. So that's a worry. We fear that we might not be liked or loved anymore. Fear of not being a winner. And it reinforces the belief that we're nothing. And that the fear is a real challenge for those who are fearing that they may never succeed. And so you become a self-fulfilling prophecy at this point. And that fear of change, again, is, you know, you want things to stay the same. You like your comfort zone. You don't like surprises. You're not comfortable meeting new people. And we fear that we don't know what we don't know, you know, which is kind of a funny thing. But there are a lot of people who fear the unknown. So that's why they fear change.
Right. If I don't see it, I don't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, the boogeyman, you know, I don't want to go there. I don't know what's going to happen to me, right?
Exactly, yeah. Our parents used to,
you know, when people go for surgery or kids, like I was talking to some kids the other day, and one of the girls was going to have her wisdom teeth out. Well, what does it feel like? What's going to happen? Will it hurt, you know?
I know.
Pain is relative for everybody. It might hurt me. It might not hurt you. I don't know. But, you know, the fear of unknown.
Yeah. You're right, Frankie, because I would definitely keep up. I still keep on my teeth to the day because I'm just too afraid of even having that needle to stick inside my mouth because I have heard people say it's excruciating pain, even though they stick you and you like, oh, just the idea. What if it wears away? Would it hurt so badly if I even feel that tooth being pulled? So it's just all them ideas. And which brings me to what you were saying about the fear of success. And I think a lot of people, they have that fear because they're afraid to get disappointed in life. You know, you get your hopes up, and then all of a sudden you get let down. And then also sometimes you've been told so much that you're a loser, like you were discussing earlier, your whole life. Mm-hmm. And then you feel like, okay, why do I deserve this success now? I don't deserve this. And even those of us who were not abused or otherwise traumatized also associate success with uncomfortable things such as maybe competition and envy.
Right. And you know, your friends start to treat you differently, and you're like, well, what? You know, I'm still the same me.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
You know? And a lot of times they sabotage you. And so, you know, when somebody comes to a coach, like myself sometimes, and they're looking to be, let's say, an entrepreneur or start a new business, and oftentimes we'll say, don't tell anybody, because the people around them will not be their best champions. They will not champion them. Even though they should, they're their friends, they won't, because they fear that this person will pull away. They fear that they'll be successful, or they fear that, you know, they'll be dragged into it somehow. And so they'll often let other people's dreams help, you know, kill those dreams. So I'll, you know, until something gets up and going, I'll often say, don't tell them, because they're dream killers, these people, your friends who don't want you to succeed.
Right.
Not because they don't like you. It's their own fear.
Exactly. They're afraid. They're afraid because they're so used to having you around, and that's not a good thing. I think those are the kind we call the needy people. They don't want to do without you, and you have to try
right.
to snatch yourself from them. So they're just as much as afraid, okay, if she gets successful, I won't have her as a friend anymore, so who I'm going to find to piggyback off of now.
Right, exactly.
And I think that what leads me to the next question, because you surround yourself around all these obstacles and objectives every day, but how can we change our lives if everyone surrounding us throw these obstacles and objectives our way?
And we were just starting to talk about that with those friends. So one of the things to do is to write down what you perceive as your obstacles. You know,
yes.
It's hard to we all can decide what an obstacle, and one of those obstacles was one of those friends. You know, our friend or our wife or our spouse, our partner, who says, you know, you can't do that. You think you can do that? You think that you can have a radio show every day? Are you crazy? You've got two kids. You got this. You got that. You can't do that. Where are you going to find people? Who's going to come on your show? Right? So
no,
they
do,
stop you from doing these things. So that's an obstacle. That's one
mm-hmm.
of the obstacles that you maybe, you know, you had to overcome. And so one is to write down what your obstacles are. And then find the solutions. Like, you have to be creative with solutions. And one of the, Lee Iacocca, who was the president of Chrysler, said, we are continually faced by great opportunities disguised as insoluble problems. And I love that, because it really forces us to be creative when we come across obstacles, you know? And that our biggest obstacle oftentimes turns into our greatest gift and our greatest achievement. So overcoming, you know, how do we overcome this? So we write it down. We find a champion maybe. Maybe you find a coach. Maybe you find somebody who will champion you and help you get through this obstacle. And you don't tell people, maybe, but it's important to understand and to perceive what you believe your obstacles are going to be to start, so that you can overcome them.
Right. I agree all the way with that one, too. So, Frankie, tell me about the importance and difference of commitment versus trying, though.
Oh, this is a good one. I really love this. And I learned this one myself. So when we say, I'm going to try, I say, you're lying. So trying is lying. Trying means I'm going to dip my toe in the pool, but I'm not going to jump in. Commitment means I'm going to jump in all the way in, both feet. You know, when our kids ask us, Mom, do you think that you can pick me up, you know, a chocolate bar or something on the way home? And you go, well, I'll try. You know, what are you saying? You're saying probably not.
It's sort of like you're lying.
I'm probably not going to stop and do that. So trying is lying. Commitment is really, it's a vow. It's a promise. You're committing to do it. So my own personal experience, I was in the hospital. I'd been in a really bad motorcycle accident, and I was in physiotherapy, and the doctor said to me, or the physiotherapist said, you know, I want you to move your leg. I had broken both femurs, hip, pelvis, everything. And I'm like, I'm trying. He goes, move your leg. I go, I'm trying. He goes, move it. And I go, I can't. I'm trying. I can't. I'm trying. And I started to cry. And he walked down and he started working with somebody else. I'm in the rehab hospital. And I was in the hospital for 6 months. And he came back. He goes, are you going to try again? And I'm like, I'm trying. Don't what part of this don't you understand? And as he walked away again and I, you know, thought about what was going on, I looked at my leg and I said, you've got to move, leg, because I don't want to be where I don't ever walk again. So you better start moving. And it moved just a little bit. And I'm like, wow. And I realized that I had a commitment to not moving my leg. So that was an automatic underlying commitment, which is something that we'll talk about next. And what that was, my commitment to not moving, because I knew it would hurt. I was afraid to hurt more than I was already, so I didn't want to move. And yet my conscious mind said, move, move, damn it, you know. But the unconscious said, no, it's going to hurt. I'm not moving that damn leg. What, are you crazy? So, you know, I said at the top of the show that, you know, if things show up in our life that we don't want, we're committed to a different outcome. And that's what I meant by that. This underlying automatic commitment that we have is a belief system. It's a belief system. Sometimes it will manifest, like when I get upset or you get upset, do you run for, you know, a tub of ice cream or chocolate bars or something that in effect kind of hurts you, you know? You don't want to be fat, but you go and eat this bad food because it makes you feel better. It's a comfort, and it's something that you've always done. That's a commitment. You know, your commitment is I'm going to go and make myself feel better by eating this crappy food. That's a commitment. But really the commitment is, if you don't have money or you don't have happiness in your life, then it's because you have a commitment to a different outcome. And maybe the commitment is, I don't deserve to be happy. I don't deserve to have money. I don't like people with money. People who are happy are stupid. Whatever it is, if you don't have it and you want it, find out what your commitment is.
Well, Frankie, I agree, like I said, because everything that you're basically saying is truth, and we have to do ourselves a favor and avoid that, what's it, that tried trap right from the start. It's absolutely vital to realize that consistently producing results requires a commitment, and that's a big step for everybody out here. It's just like a rocket fuel when it comes to reaching your goals, especially the big ones. So we have to hold ourselves back from doing that.
Yeah, you can't try to have a show. You can't try to go to work. You can't try, you know, to date somebody.
Exactly.
You do it or you don't. Absolutely.
Now, when it comes to my girls doing their homework and they say, oh, I don't know how to do it, I tell them, instead of saying try, I tell them, do your best, and like P90X tell me to do your best and forget the rest. Instead of saying try, because it's either you're going to do that problem or you're not, because obviously you're going to skip over and wait till I at least help you to give you the answer, so.
Right.
Which,
exactly.
Yeah.
But there is no trying. You know, trying. There is no trying. If I said try, I want you to try to drop your pencil on the floor right now. If I looked at the floor, your pencil would probably be on the floor.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't try then. You didn't try because you committed. You did it.
Exactly.
So there's no try. There's do or don't. It's like Yoda, you know? There is no try.
So what are some of the underlying automatic commitments, and how are they affecting one's life?
Well, we just talked about that a minute ago, about the underlying automatic commitment, but how they affect your life is by what's showing up. And like I said, you know, if you always go, how come I never get a really great guy to go out with, or how come I never have money, or I never get the job that I want, or I never, you know, have these things, there's an underlying automatic commitment to a different outcome. And that stems from a belief system that was, you know, imparted in you, maybe as a child, maybe as a young adult, where people told you something that you believed. And so now we're going to start to challenge our belief systems. We're going to ask ourselves, like I said, oh, I don't have money, but I want money. Okay, what do I think about money? Do I like money? Yep, I like money. Do I like people with money? No, I don't like people with money. Oh, so if I had money, then I wouldn't like myself. So I need to change that belief right now because I want money.
There we go.
So do you see how you ask yourself the question until you come to the wrong answer, and then you go, okay, well, that's my belief system then. I don't like people with money. So how could I possibly ever have it if I don't like people who have it?
And there we go again, Frankie. You're sabotaging yourself by saying that. People say, just like I was talking previously in my show, we say, oh, I want a new car. Oh, but I can't afford it. Now you're sabotaging yourself again because you're thinking negative. Now you're not going to be able to afford a car because you just said out your mouth, I won't be able to afford it. But you still want that new car.
Right. So the question is, how can I afford it? How can I get one? How can I get what I want?
That's the question,
yes. How can I do it? Because there's an answer. You know, you're going to say, well, maybe I could get a job. Maybe I could get a second job. Maybe I could get some money. Maybe I could win one if I fill out a bunch of ballots on, you know, the Internet. Who knows? Maybe Ellen will give me one. I'll write to her.
Well,
right?
I just want to say I just love your fight, and you did not give up even after the motorcycle incident, the losing your job, the marital divorce, and even losing your dog at the end. I mean, what actually kept you going through all this?
Oh, geez, that's a really good question. I guess, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have a positive outlook. I really do believe deep down that everything will always work out and things will be okay. And, you know, it was a lot of loss in a very short period of time. It really was. And a lot of pain, you know, physical and emotional and mental pain. But I think that the idea that, you know, my kids needed me, and I don't like to give up. You know, I'm not a quitter. And really having this optimism. And even when I was in the hospital, it was funny because I asked around. I said, you know, I asked people, were your parents pessimists or optimists? You know, people who were fighters, people who didn't fight, people who gave up, people who didn't want to get better. You know, I started to do my own little survey. Pessimists or optimists, parents? Because I had one of each, and a lot of people had one of each. But for me, you know, I preferred the things are going to be better than Chicken Little. Watch out, look out, look out, the sky is going to fall. You know?
Yes.
And I read a lot of spiritual books. I went on a real spiritual journey because I lost, you know, my identity, really. You know, a lot of people times, you know, you meet people at a party, go, oh, what do? You know, who are you by what your job? Well, I didn't have a job. I didn't have a husband. I wasn't in my band anymore. I wasn't on the Masters Dragon Boat team anymore. You know, I wasn't any of that. The only thing that I still had left was I was still a mom. And so I said, well, you know, I wasn't the car that I drove or any of that. So who am I? And so I had to go on that journey of finding and rebuilding Frankie. Who is she? You know, who does she want to be? She wants to be somebody who doesn't vegetate. She wants to be somebody who's not a drain on society. She wants to be somebody who, you know, goes to school and can still converse and not, you know, still read a new book and do things. And I don't know if you ever – do you watch Dancing with the Stars? Do you ever watch that show? There's a young girl on that show right now, a double amputee. And she's doing amazing feats, you know, dancing without legs and you know, with these fake legs. And it's absolutely phenomenal. And this is the epitome of somebody who did not impose limits on themselves. They said, you know what, I think I can do that. How can I do that? Let me make that happen for myself. And she's doing it. She's, you know, an Olympian, a Paralympian, snowboarder, with double amputee, no legs, you know. So here's somebody that if they can do it, anybody can do it. And it really is about how you think.
I mean, she give you, just watching that show, she give you so much inspiration every week.
Absolutely.
And if that doesn't inspire you, I don't know what will. This young lady gets out there, and she's showing you that you can still be capable of doing whatever you want to do as long as you put your mind to it. You can't sit back and say, oh, I went through this tragic incident like you did, Frank. You went through it, but you got to be strong and move on. You got to fight that fight. It's a fight that you got to fight.
You got to fight for yourself.
That devil wants you to give up, and the minute you give up, he has won. And that's why I'm proud of you, Frank. You didn't give up no matter what.
Thank you, Tanisha. I appreciate that. Thank you.
But God was with you. He held on to you. You didn't give up. And I am. I'm going to say, I'm proud of Frankie. And I'm proud of anyone else who out there is fighting the fight. Do not give up.
That's right. And, you know, I'm proud of you, too. Look what you're accomplishing. You've got a daily radio show, which is a lot of work, and I know because I used to have 6 shows. It's a lot of work to put on a show and to find guests and to write about them and put them on your website. It's a lot of work, especially when, you know, you've got young girls who are in school and you know, you got to shop and make dinner and do all that great stuff. Plus, host your show. It's a lot of work. It is.
And
don't let anybody tell you it's not.
Oh, no, I won't. And I know a lot of people, how you do all that. And I know they're probably not trying to be negative, but I'm going to just keep going till I know when to actually stop. That's why I said when June comes, I'll lessen my days. I'll take a Sunday off so I can definitely get back to church and praise my Father. I want to get back to my church members. But, Frankie, I know you have your latest book out, No Bull Allowed, How to Lose the Losers and Lasso in Love. Can you tell us about it?
Oh, yeah. That was kind of a fun book. I co-wrote it with Kelly Wallace, a good friend of mine. And we decided that love had been written about in songs so much, from beginnings to middles to ends. And so we took song titles, like, you know, My Best Friend's Girl or things like that, or I Want to Have Your Baby, and we coached women who were having bad relationships, you know, over and over and over again, people who really wanted to finally have that relationship with their dreams. So each of these song titles, we took 58 song titles and gave our personal, experiences and our coaching experiences, and it's really a workbook as well, to help people figure out, you know, these situations that they've been in from beginnings of relationships, middles of relationships, and the ending of relationships, to find themselves somewhere in there and to learn and grow from reading the coaching, from reading our personal experiences, and from, you know, finding out for themselves about why is this thing happening to them? You know, how do you go about finding Mr. Right? You know, breakups are really hard, and so how do you get over this lost love and move forward? You know, a lot of women are looking, you know, for Mr. Perfect to walk through the door. And why won't that happen? You know, and why do women stay in negative relationships? And why are they still waiting for that loser to come back to them? So the book is about that, and it answers all of those questions and how to, you know, why would they sabotage their relationships? And so we show them how to, you know, refocus and reframe thoughts and become that person that they want to be in order for the person that they want to walk in the door.
Exactly. We got to stop doing that, and that sounds like an interesting book. I like that. Don't take that bull. You don't have to be in a bad relationship to make it. Being in a relationship doesn't mean to be with someone else. It means just to be with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What it means to me. And you have
to. Yeah, but if you're going to walk around in your curlers all day, And, you know, you don't wash your clothes, and you don't know why you know, Brad Pitt or somebody's not knocking on your door.
Yeah,
you know, it starts with you, right? It starts with you, and then move on. You know, if you never read a book or have something interesting to say, why would somebody interesting want to talk to you?
Exactly, and you going around, especially, and I know we're getting short on our time on the show, especially if you know, ladies and gents out there, that you have a bad hygiene problem and you're wondering why no one is focused on you. You have to take care of that issue. No one wants to smell from you while trying to communicate with you. So that's an issue. And I know a lot of times we don't smell ourselves, but we have to. So number one thing, get yourself in order. Check yourself. So, Frankie, where can we order your books from? And how can, if we want to ask you any more questions, how do we get in touch with you?
Oh, thanks, Technisha. You can order my books on Amazon. They come both digital and hard copy, so Amazon.com, Amazon.ca. And you can reach me at UnstoppableFrankiePicasso.com is my website, and CoachPicasso@Rogers.com, and that's PICASSO at Rogers.com is my email. Thanks so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
Frankie, I appreciate you for being on the show. I appreciate a strong woman who uplifts others. I really do, and I hope we can stay in contact and do this again.
Absolutely, Technisha. Thank you so much. Have yourself a wonderful afternoon.
You too. And thank you.
Bye now.
You're welcome. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in and chatting with me on the box. Don't be afraid to ever call in. You can always do that. I love the comments. I love when you're engaging with me online, through the phone. So please, stay in touch, and I will just want you to know to stay blessed out there. Be careful. As I said, the storm is still continuing. There's still a tornado watch here in Atlanta, Georgia, and part of the South and Alabama everywhere. As I said before, we also lost two people in Alabama, so let's just take caution. And if you do have a tornado watch near your home, just be careful. Go down to your basement. If you don't have a basement, find the interior part of your house to get in. And let's just stay protected and stay prayed up today, as always. I can't stress that enough. We just have to stay prayed up. Do not let anybody break you today. That is the message. You are a strong individual, and you can do this. You can do it. Don't try, but do it. And I'll see you tomorrow at 12 o'clock p.m. on The Bright Side with Technisha, and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Technisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.